On today's Books on Air podcast, we have a very special treat for you. The music that you will hear was written and composed by our guest.
I'm in trouble, run out of air to breathe. I'm seeing double through this spaced out fantasy. Been walking.
Welcome to Books on Air, the podcast that you don't want to miss. You're about to get a sneak peek at what goes on behind the scenes with authors. We'll find out their secret recipe for creating a book. We'll tell you where they get their ideas, and you will get the inside scoop on their next project. Want to know more? Okay, we'll tell you where to find them on social media. Are you ready? All right, let's meet today's author.
It's time. Get back down to earth.
I have to tell you that this gentleman I'm about to introduce you to is so talented. I am just blown away. His name is Mark C. Jackson. Not only is he an award-winning author with a passion for Western historical fiction, but he's also a singer, a songwriter, an actor, and a standing member of the Western Writers of America. And he's joining me today to talk about his latest Zebediah Creed novel, The Great Texas Dance, The Tales of Zebediah Creed, Book 2. Mark, welcome.
Thank you, Suzanne. It's glad to, so glad to be with you today. Well, I'm very grateful.
Well, you are pretty impressive. The first Zebediah Creed book was titled An Eye for an Eye. You published that in 2017, and right away, you received the American Fiction Award for Best Adventure/Historical Fiction. What a way to start, Mark.
That was quite a surprise. First book, I published that, and I was 59 years old, first book I ever wrote. And not just, I was surprised to get it published, and because I hear that so many stories about writers really struggling to find a publisher and then getting their book released. But then to get that award was just something else. It just really was. So.
Well, I have to say congratulations. But
thank you.
Let's go back in time. I went to your website and I looked at everything there, and there was one thing that really struck me that I know our listeners would find interesting. There's a story that you have on that website about your grandmother, Fayette Glass. Would you share that story with our listeners? I love it.
Yeah. She was a writer. She was a poet, and I used to, stay the night with her, and she would be sitting at the dinner table, writing these poems. And I didn't know what she was. I was 5 or 6 years old. I just started beginning to read, and she was actually taking a class, a correspondence course. In those days, they all came in the mail, and then I found out a few weeks later that she was getting published in the Daily Oklahoman. And my mother would, bring the paper to me and says, look, Mark, there's your grandmother's poem in the newspaper. And I thought, at that age, that was so cool. I was just completely surprised and inspired, and still am today, that she did that. And she showed me the way to not only write quality work, but to put it out there for everybody and anybody to read. And so when I started writing, you learn how to write. I learned how to write by a couple of different ways. I'd go to Barnes & Noble. Once I started An Eye for an Eye, can I just keep going and tell you about this thing?
Hang on, Mark. I know our listeners are so curious about this, and I'm curious about this too. One of the things that I'm curious about, I love the Barnes and Noble story, and you used to go buy two magazines and you'd read those cover to cover. So please go ahead and finish that story, and then I've got a question.
Okay. Well, when I was 52 years old, I guess, 2011, I took this little class out here in an organization called San Diego's Writers Inc., and it was on flash fiction. Why I took it, I have no idea. But I wrote this little story, 600-word story, from a dream I had about me as a scout taking these people across the prairie. It's wintertime, and I'm responsible for these folks. And so, based on that dream, I wrote this short story called The Hanging. And as the first prose, I've been a songwriter for many years and recorded records and performed, but I'd never written a short story or written real prose before. And so what I did was I wrote this short story, and everybody in the class just kind of was blown away, and I thought, well, maybe I got something here. And that's where I found Zebediah Creed, my character, because I wrote it in first-person narrative, and though it was me, it was from the dream, it was him that I discovered. So I just kept writing. And once I realized that I may have something here, and I let a few people read it. And then I got involved in a writer's group, the oldest writer's group in San Diego, San Diego Professional Writers Group, with Chet Cunningham as our leader. And he read the piece and loved it, invited me in. And then one day I was at Barnes & Noble and I bought two magazines, both the Writer's Digest and the Writer's Magazine. And for 6 years after that, I made a pilgrimage every month and I bought every issue I could for 6 years. And I read them cover to cover. I love the interviews and how other authors and writers did their work. Everything from character study, how to build an arc for a story, how to do plots. And that's basically how I learned to write. That and just flat writing chapters, bringing them to my writer's group every other week and being critiqued.
Which is one of the hardest things to do, is to have the writing that has poured out of you to be critiqued like that. You know, a couple of things strike me about what you've just said. First of all, I think you just gave a really great piece of advice to anyone who is considering beginning to write. Often people will think they've got a book inside of them, but they don't know how to get that book out. And I think what you just said, the story that you just told about how you started, the writer's group, I think, is important. Looking at how other authors put their work together is important. Listening to interviews like ours about how authors work and what they do and how they think is also important. One of the things that also strikes me is that you work in the Western genre, and I think that that is a genre that is uniquely American, and it's such a part of the fiber of who we are that I don't think it will ever, ever, ever go out of fashion. We're as interested in Butch and Sundance today as we were when we saw them on the screen with Redford and Newman. And I have to confess that I'm watching Yellowstone, which is this new production that Kevin Costner is starring in that's on the Paramount Network. And it's got this edge. It's got this Western edge. And I think that one of the things you are is a storyteller. You are a singer. When you sing, you tell a story. You're a songwriter. When you write a song, you're writing a story. When you write a book, you're writing a story. When you act, you're telling a story. I think one of the things that really pulls you together for me is that you are, at your core, a wonderful storyteller. I love that Zebediah Creed, the way you talked about him, because fiction writers have a unique relationship with their characters. You know exactly what he looks like, don't you?
I do. the thing is that through two entire books, there's only one vague description, and it's his own perception of what he looks like in a mirror. We know that he has steel gray eyes, that he's 25 years old. I have an idea of what he looks like, but I really, maybe not even on purpose, but it just hasn't come out to have to describe him, because he is, Zebediah Creed is the one that is writing these books, in both An Eye for an Eye and the Great Texas Dance. The preface, they both have prefaces with him writing, opening the entire book as if he wrote these in Mendocino, California, in the 1880s, when he's 60-some years old. And this is, the books take place, An Eye for an Eye, 1835, Texas Dance is 1836. So this is a long time after he went through these experiences. But that's really who writes them. It's like Zeb, I'm Zeb's conduit. And I treat it as such. I don't know if that answered your question.
It does. You're doing exactly what fiction writers do. It's the most interesting creative process that you can talk about. And to someone who is not a creative and who doesn't understand, it sounds like you're a little nuts, but you're seeing through. Well, it does. I mean, I've written fiction myself, and I know it's almost, it's difficult to talk about because it's almost like a possession. You're almost seeing things through the eyes of another individual that's not you, but it's that creative process that just kicks in your brain. And it's just amazing. Let's give our listeners an overview of what the second book is like. Let's talk a little bit about The Great Texas Dance.
Okay. Well, at the end of, well, just a brief thing about An Eye for an Eye. It's Zebediah Creed is a former slave of the Lakota that becomes a warrior through the Sundance. He and his brother are, at the time of the opening of the first book, they are fur trappers, and they're bringing furs down the lower Missouri River from Rendezvous in 1835, and they get bushwhacked. And Zeb is left for dead. Jonathan, his brother, is murdered. And then Zeb is found by a Quaker doctor and his daughter, bringing back to health. And they want him to stay and live with them, but he's got to go after the murderers. And that takes him down the Mississippi River to St. Louis, and then a brief one-night horrendous stay in Natchez, Mississippi, and then on to New Orleans, where he does indeed find, he finds both the murderers and a lot of other things transpire. Revenge is not as sweet as we think it is. Revenge has consequences, and they certainly do with Zeb. So at the end of the book, he's in an homage to his dead friend, Billy Freeze, he decides to go to Texas. Well, what's going on in Texas in 1835, 1836, is the Texas Revolution. The Alamo, Goliad, San Jacinto, everything, all the mythology, all the stories one hears about the you know, how Texas became a republic fighting against the Mexicans. And so the Great Texas Dance opens up with Zeb at the Alamo 4 days before the fall. He and his buddy Granger end up getting out, though. I couldn't have Zeb at the Alamo and then just die. That wouldn't work because he lives on to write these books, right?
Right.
So I had to get him out. And so he becomes a messenger. Well, that sets off him off on this journey that takes him throughout, experiences the entire Texas Revolution through Gonzales, working with General Sam Houston, end up in Goliad, escapes from Goliad, the Goliad massacre, the horrendous one-day murder that the Mexicans did, the Mexican army did. It was, and then toward the end of the book, toward the end of the story, he finds out that it ain't so. Well, he finds out that the whole thing is about preserving slavery. And then he realizes that he's, as he was a slave in the past, it really sends him into a contradiction of why he's there in the first place. But then by then, he's made a friend with a guy named James Lee, this young man, and he has made a commitment to the young man's mother to see him through. So then it becomes a personal commitment, no matter his what ideologies or conflicts he has with the overall intention of the revolution in the first place. So,
is there a section of the story that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yes, I do. I have one. This is a beginning of chapter 30. I'm trying not to rustle as much paper as I have to, so
it's all right.
Okay. He and James have indeed escaped from the Goliad massacre. If you're familiar with the Goliad massacre, it was a surrender at, they had a battle, that, some Texans, this militia, almost 400 men had surrendered. They were told that they were going to go back to New Orleans. And the Mexican army, Santa Anna's orders were to offer no quarter. And that was it was a red flag saying that you will be treated as pirates and you will all be killed if you fight against my army. And you have to remember that this was Mexican territory. He was defending, in his mind, he was defending his own country against rebels. So, but James and again, Zeb has to stay alive somehow, tell the tale. And they make it all the way back up to a town called Gonzales, where they say that the Texas Revolution began in the first place. And this is what they find when they come to Gonzales. This is chapter 30, Groche Plantation, April 1836. The ferryman sat on the edge of his dock, staring out across the river, west toward the setting sun. The wood planks were scorched by fire. The flat-bottomed barge lay a few strides downriver, splayed out, half in water and half on the shore, burned, chopped to pieces, as if 10 men came and hacked it apart with axes. The knotted rope that allowed the man for years to carry so many folks across the river had been cut, pulled from the far side pulley, and left trailing in the water to disappear downstream. They burned my barge and burned my home. James and I sat on our horses on shore. He turned and nodded. I remember you, both of you. Your dress don't mean nothing. I remember your faces and eyes and words and what you did. And you, he glanced up at James, puked on my boat. He looked at me. And you asked what day it was, with the bells ringing and it's Sunday, looking for the big fella. Hell, I remember everybody I take across the river. Everybody. How long ago, I asked. At least a week. The ferryman's appearance, his thin, haggard look, was as if for all this time he sat on the dock in desolation, not moving but to fish water from the river to drink. I looked back up the slope toward where the town once stood. Who burned it? General Houston. Wasn't 2 days later the whole damn Mexican army came through, built their own barges and boats and crossed. I stood right over there and watched them. They didn't care whether I lived or died. Their general rowed the boat over as if he was George Washington. He come ashore, looked at me, and saluted, and rode right on through the burn-up town like it was nothing, and was gone. How long you been sitting on this dock? James asked. He shook his head. Since that day, I suppose. After refusing what little food we could offer, we left him there alone, watching the twilight disappear into the night.
That's wow. It. Mark, beautiful prose. And I know one of the things that you really strive for in the books is a realistic depiction of what frontier life was really like in the 1800s. So how do you do your research? Where do you come up with this? How do you find it out?
Well, I have to say that Google is a wonderful thing. It really is. For the first book, I use this as an example all the time. For the first book, I needed to know what was going on in New Orleans in 1835 with the act of dueling, okay? So I punched in New Orleans dueling in 1835. And, well, you know, you would not believe how much information is out there. And I found out that they dueled, most all the duels, first of all, were illegal, yet they still did it. New Orleans was the dueling capital of the United States at that time. And in the first third of the of that year, they had 135 duels.
Wow.
And they had it at a place called the Oaks, which is now the New Orleans City Park. And you can go there and stand under the oak trees and look around and think that in 1835, this is where they, you know, men were called out in disrespect and killed each other. And they would use shotguns. They would use knives. They would use swords, all kinds of, they would use poison in the tips of handkerchiefs. It was just weird.
It's amazing.
But once I found that out, I was able to then stage my duel. I actually reenacted it out in my house here. And it was done with long knives, which would have been absolutely accurate back then, tied with tethered together with a strand of rope or leather. I used leather. Tied together, bound. They each other were bound and fighting with long knives. So,
oh wow, violence. You know, I mean, that just I can see it in my head.
It was a very violent. Yeah, it was a very violent time. People don't realize there was no law. I mean, there was very little law, and then the law was politicized, and it was often skewed to protect the most powerful.
Well, there's another thing that I want our listeners to know, and I was really surprised when I found this out. Your mom's name is Judith Ann Jackson, and she's your collaborator on these books. How in the world did that happen?
Well, about a third through An Eye for an Eye, I called her one day, and she called me. She says, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm writing, and well, read some to me." And so I did. And then she said, "Well, that doesn't seem right. I don't know what it was, whatever was what I was writing at the time." I said, "Well, what do you mean?" She said, "Well, now, Mark, I've read a lot of books like this," and she has. She's an avid reader, and that just whatever you're writing just doesn't seem right. What if you have him do this? And what happened was, is then I began calling her up. I've got another chapter to read. Let me run this past you. And her favorite, I love telling this, her favorite thing to say was, "Well, Zeb wouldn't say that." Or Zeb wouldn't do that. Now, Mark, you know Zeb. I would think, and you know, almost every time she would be right. I'd have to rewrite it, whatever I was working on at the time.
And you've got a crucible for your character, don't you?
I do, yeah. So if we get ready to publish the first book, and she called me out of the blue one day, and she goes, "Now, Mark, I think I ought to be on that cover with you." And I said, I thought a minute, and I go, "Mom, I have to tell you, you were quite inspirational in writing this book. However, there was not a word that I know of that you actually wrote. So how about I dedicate the book to you? We'll go with that." And she goes, "Oh, okay. I still think I ought to be on the cover of that book with you."
I love it. Now, I also know that you have moved on to the next project, and you're working on Blue Rivers of Heaven, and that's going to be the third book in the Creed series. We mm-hmm. have teased our listeners with the book unmercifully. So let's tell them where they can find both books. Now, I always check Amazon. I went to Amazon and I looked, and there were both books. And let me give the specific title and spell your name and everything so that everybody can find it. If they go to Amazon, the first book is titled An Eye for an Eye, The Tales of, I'm going to spell Zebadiah. It's exactly the way it sounds, but it's Zebadiah. Last name Creed, Creed. That's the first book. The book that we talked about today is The Great Texas Dance. That's easy. The Tales of Zebadiah Creed, and this is book two. Now, the author is Mark, M-A-R-K, just like you'd think it would be spelled, C, period, last name, Jackson, J-A-C-K-S-O-N. The book comes right up. It's easy. They can buy it on Amazon if they want to, but there are other places that it's available as well, Mark. Where else can they find it?
Well, I like to send people to Barnes & Noble simply because I have an affinity for that company, that bookstore. I'd also like to send people to Powell's Books. You can buy the book, and I've Ted the Great Texas Dance online. Powell's is one of the largest independent booksellers on the West Coast. They're out of Portland, Oregon. I suppose you could go to your own local bookstore, and they will order it for you from Ingram's, through Ingram's, books are distributed through them from my publisher, Five Star Publishing, and they're out of Maine. So, I love independent bookstores. If you have one in your town or city, contact them. I'll say it anyway. The last several books I bought has just been through Amazon because there's such a huge, convenient way to buy books. So
they make it so easy.
They make it almost too easy.
Yeah, they do.
And if you do me a big favor and you read the books, go on there and give me a review. I think that's important for all of us authors. And we'd like to know what you think about our work. So.
Well, let's also tell them where else they can find you. You have a website. Let's give them that website address.
It's www.markcjacksonwriter.com.
And let's tell them what they'll find if they go to the website.
Well, I just recently posted a video of a Zoom. Well, it was a Zoom panel with the San Diego Writers Festival that I actually hosted it and put it together. That was supposed to have been done live in April. And the San Diego Writers Festival people has done a cool thing. Rather than having the live event, which was canceled, they're doing 4 days throughout the summer of bringing the people that were originally scheduled to be a part of it online. And I was on a panel with the Western Writers of America. It was called More Than Sage and Cowboys, or Sagebrush and Cowboys, an Introduction to the Western Writers of America. So I just recently posted that. I've got music on there. I have links to YouTube music that I've done for many, many years, reviews, and, of course, my little story about my grandmother and my time in the Navy and how I ended up talking with you guys today. So, and my son helped me build it, and I think it's a pretty good site.
I do too. I went there and looked around. I agree with you. If they want your music, Mark, can they find your music on Amazon as well? If they just put in your name?
Try it. Or you can go directly to cdbaby.com. I think they're still available. I've got CDs up there. But you can stream, you can go on Spotify and find two of my records. Just look up Mark Jackson Band. That's in fact, you can Google Mark Jackson Band and I'll come up. You can also Google Mark C. Jackson, anywhere in the universe and I'll come up. So I locked that name in a while back. My publicist suggested I do that. So
good idea. You're also on Facebook. So if they want to find you on Facebook, tell them how to do that.
I've got an author's page on Facebook. It's called Mark C. Jackson, at Mark C. Jackson Writer, or just do a query for Mark C. Jackson, and I'll come up. I also have a personal page. Drop in and say hi anytime. I also have one for the Mark Jackson Band, too, so... it's all accessible. I do my best to keep my author's pages up to date. And, drop in and say hi. I'd love to hear from you.
Well, you're just doing so many exciting, interesting, and fun things. Our time to talk has really come to an end, but I have one thing.
Oh, no.
That I know. I'm really having a great time with you. I really hate for this to be over.
Me, too. We could talk for... another hour or
so. I know, we really could easily. One more thing that I want to give you a chance to say to the people who are listening to us. I always have a bias. I like for the author to really have the last word about their book. These books are hard-edged, they're gritty, they're stories, they're exciting. Did you just write them strictly for entertainment, which they are extremely entertaining? But as a reader, if I finish and I metaphorically close the back cover of The Great Texas Dance, is there something that you want me to leave with besides just saying that was a great story?
Well, my motto has always been that although it is fiction, it must ring true. In other words, the story that the journey that Zeb takes throughout these books must be authentic. No sugarcoating, because it particularly with the violence. It was a very violent time. You had to survive. I mean, it was life and death. As far as, in particular, The Great Texas Dance, know that the idea and the perception of historical events change, and intentions of events throughout our history in America change with that. There has never been, I won't say never, very few stories about the Texas Revolution are there, is it said or even mentioned that the major intention to fight against the Mexicans to create a republic was to maintain the act of owning other people, and that would be slavery. That is very rarely mentioned. I found one reference book to that, that I sent the author both the books, and I thanked him profusely for writing the book that he did. He's a university professor out of North Dallas University, or Dallas of University of North Dallas, there where you live. So if there's a message that I don't like messages coming from me, really, I think the reader should probably make up their own mind. Just know going in to have an open mind, and that be mindful of changing one's perception of an event or historical event that they've thought was perceived a different way. That's a long-winded explanation. And I just, like I said on that panel, you know, the reader will be the judge. If it's well written, then the message will come through. And oftentimes, as Ray Bradbury said, sometimes we writers don't even know what we wrote until years later. So, I hope that answers your question.
It does. And one of the things that I really like and appreciate that you've done is that, you know, often we look at history exactly the way you said. We look at the top part of history and we only think about the term in general. We look at the Texas Revolution and we think about the Alamo and those kinds of things in general terms. What I really like that you do is that you step into the role of the individual and you look at history through the eyes of a single person and you bring that history alive in a very different way. And I think that's really, really a great talent that you've got there. And it's really a very interesting way to look at the whole events. So thank you, Mark. It's just been an absolute pleasure to talk with you today. Thank you so much for being my guest on Books on Air.
Well, thank you, Suzanne, for having me. It's been an honor. It's been cool, you know. It's been fun. If it ain't fun, then it ain't worth doing. And this has been fun. So
excellent. Remember, you can find the latest Zebediah Creed book, The Great Texas Dance by Mark C. Jackson, on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. You've been listening to the Books on Air podcast brought to you on webtalkradio.net. And by the way, you can also hear this podcast on iTunes as well as iHeartRadio. I'm Suzanne Harris. Now, I hope you'll join us on our next Books on Air podcast. And remember, it's the place to be. Thanks so much for listening.
Gotta get back down. Gotta get back down to the river. Get back down to the river. Gotta get back down.